Continuing with Canto 5, Chapter 13, this morning's verse is text 6. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam jalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Nirvidyate quacha yakshair ritasoho. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate niraddham. Asadhya dhavam quachit agni tapto. Nirvidyate quacha yakshair hritasaho. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Nirvidyate quacha yakshair ritasaho. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Nirvidyate quacha. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Navidyate quachad yakshair ritasaho. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Vidyate quachat yakshair itasaho. Quacit vitoya sarito biyati. Parasparam chalasate nirandaha. Asajya dhavam quacit agni tapto. Nirvidyate quachat yakshair ritasaho. Quacit. Sometimes. Vitoyaha, without depth to the water. Saritaha, rivers. Abiyati, he goes to bathe or jumps in. Parasparam, one another. Cha, and avashate desires nirandaha with no stock of food asadhya experiencing dabham a forest fire in family life kva chit sometimes agni taptaha burned by fire nirvidyate is despondent kva somewhere cha and yakshai by kings resembling rogues and thieves ritta taken away asuho wealth which is as dear as one's life translation sometimes the conditioned soul jumps into a shallow river or being short of food grains he goes to beg food from people who are not at all charitable sometimes he suffers from the burning heat of household life, which is like a forest fire, and sometimes he becomes sad to have his wealth, which is as dear as life, plundered by kings in the name of heavy income taxes. Two-paragraph purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one is hot due to the scorching sun, one sometimes jumps into a river to gain relief. However, if the river is almost dried up and the water is too shallow, one may break his bones by jumping in. The conditioned soul is always experiencing miserable conditions. Sometimes his efforts to get help from friends, are exactly like jumping into a dry river. By such actions, he does not derive any benefit. He only breaks his bones. Sometimes, suffering from a shortage of food, one may go to a person who is neither able to give charity nor willing to do so. Sometimes, one is stationed in household life, which is compared to a forest fire, samsara dava nanavida loka. When a man is heavily taxed by the government, he becomes very sad. Heavy taxation obliges one to hide his income. But despite this endeavor, the government agents are often so vigilant and strong that they take all the money away and the conditioned soul becomes very aggrieved. Paragraph. Thus, people are trying to become happy within the material world, but this is like trying to be happy in a forest fire. No one need go to a forest to set it ablaze. Fire takes place automatically. Similarly, no one wants to be unhappy in family life or worldly life, but the laws of nature. By the laws of nature, unhappiness and distress are forced upon everyone. To become dependent on another's maintenance is very degrading, semicolon. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, everyone should live independently. Only the Shudras are unable to live independently. They are obliged to serve someone for maintenance. It is said in the Shastras, Kalau Shudra Sambhava. In this age of Kali, everyone is dependent on another's mercy for the maintenance of the body. Therefore, everyone is classified as a Shudra. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that in Kali Yuga, the government will levy taxes without reciprocally benefiting the citizens. Anavrishcha vinankshanti Durbhiksha Kara Pidita. In this age, there will also be shortage of rain. Therefore, scarcity of food will arise. The citizens will be very much harassed by government taxation. In this way, the citizens will abandon their attempts to lead a peaceful life and will leave their homes and hearths and go to the forest in sheer disappointment. And it goes on, a whole chapter of scare tactics. But you know, throughout this section, it's quachit, quachit, sometimes, sometimes. So, but if it's not this harassment, it's that harassment, some misfortune arising. So once again, the Bhagavad Gita's message is here being expanded in the Bhagavatam, like the undergraduate and then the graduate study. So, yehi samsparsha ja bhoga, the nature of material existence is samsparsha, that is, the objects of the sense and the senses, with the expectation of bhoga, I should enjoy. That's material life. The same object, the same senses in devotional life is the senses are meant for service to Krishna, the objects are meant for service to Krishna. In engaging the senses with objects for the service to Krishna, that's the internal potency, and that is a medium, that medium of service to Krishna in practical ways is the life of bhakti, along with meditation upon the object who is to be pleased. Two things: the practical activity, what you do with your senses, and what you do with your mind, both in a mood of service. When that mood of service is missing, the mood of service to Krishna is missing, then we, Maya covers living entity, and there is the substitute object, and the substitute object is sense gratification. Prabhupada uses that word over and over and over. Sense gratification. But there's no gratification. But it's the interest that happiness should be the senses meet sense objects in the mood of enjoyment. And dukkha, distress. The expectation is sukha, and the experience is dukkha. And even if there's some momentary happiness or pleasure, because something is driving everybody, there's something, there's an experience. You smell something, taste something, touch something, hear something, and the experience is, it's nice, according to the modes of nature. And one man's food is another man's poison. Persons that like music in the mode of ignorance, they don't like music in the mode of goodness. Persons in the mode of goodness, they don't like music in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. It just, it grates their sensibilities. But it's all the modes of nature that's the byproduct of, we become conditioned by the modes of nature as a byproduct of our wishing independent enjoyment. So we become conditioned by those modes of nature. So this is detailing some of the aspects of the whole section of searching for happiness. So this verse in particular, these Prabhupada has modified the language. Instead of the person who's in the forest, it's now specifically his language is the conditioned soul. We become conditioned by guna and karma. We can say we become conditioned by guna. We can say we become conditioned by karma, but it's a package. Very expertly woven shackles or bondage. Guna, one of the meanings Prabhupada has given us, it means rope. So commonly, ropes, to make them really strong, there's three strands. Each of the strands has different sub-strands, but three strands that are woven together to make a strong rope. You can have more than three, but common is three. So similarly, the three ropes, the three modes of nature, bind, condition the soul to a false sense of happiness. And just as we discussed yesterday evening, Prahlad Maharaj's phrase, Maya Sukha, Maya Sukhaya Bharam Udvahato Vimudhan, the whole line. That phrase summarizes this whole chapter and other chapters, the forest of material enjoyment and so forth. Many different sections of the Bhagavatam elaborating on Maya Sukha. So there's four in this particular verse. The sometimes and sometimes. So the first one is jumping into a shallow river is a metaphor where scorching heat, you want relief from the scorching heat of summer, depending on where you are. Scorching heat can be really hot, and then relief is jumping in a river. But if the river is shallow, you don't get relief, you get pain. Perhaps even breaking of bones, but doesn't give the relief that one is expecting. So the explanation given by Srila Prabhupada here is the miserable existence, the misfortune that comes from material existence, we may go to some friend for some relief. And if the friend is unable or unwilling, there is disappointment. There's no fruit or no benefit. Repeatedly, a core teaching of Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam is, again, using Prabhupada's language, fruitive activities. That is, doing something, expecting something on the material side. And those who are attached to fruitive activities, that's the very root of bondage, I and mine. So my activities produce some fruits, and so the fruits are mine, and I want to be the enjoyer of the fruits. It covers and binds and conditions the soul. On the other hand, again and again, Prabhupada would say, there's no practical result, that's how he would say the phrase, result. No practical result. Meaning, you're doing, if there's no practical result, then it's a waste of time. So the practical result indicator is put in, you know, simple terms, is Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness has its practical result also. And if one does high-grade activities, austerity and charity and this and that and things that are good, but it doesn't bring awakening of Krishna consciousness, then there's no positive result. Without giving examples, listen carefully when you hear Prabhupada explain Krishna conscious philosophy, and it's a phrase that he uses repeatedly. So we want a practical result. We're not fruitive. I was thinking this morning of preparing a Sunday feast class on Great Expectations. Those of you from India, you don't know what that is. That's a book by Charles Dickens. You probably know because of school. You know, he wrote a number of books. Story of Krishna's Past, and it's like, anyway. He's a very interesting British author, very, very detailed and intricate in depicting things. So, Great Expectations. The punchline is misery. So the material side is Great Expectations, but what do you do? You don't become an impersonalist. So what's real Great Expectations is Krishna consciousness. So I think I want to discuss that more. The expectation of finding happiness where there's no happiness, that's a false expectation. And it's very great. It rules the material world. It's Maya. Remember one lecture at the Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn, Prabhupada was explaining, as soon as you turn your attention away from Krishna, you may think, I've been serving Krishna for so long, I need a little break. As soon as you think like that, there's some interruption in submission unto Krishna, being Krishna's unalloyed servant. As soon as there's a break, it's not like you have to call, Maya, could you come? Immediately Maya's there. And Maya is beckoning. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. He gives examples of that. It's in Greek mythology. Those of you that know a little bit about Greek mythology, I think the spelling and the pronunciation is different, but a woman named Cyrene or Siren or something like that, and she's beckoning. It's Maya in Greek mythology. Because as we know, the Bhagavatam explains that the Greeks are part of the deviated kings that Lord Parshuram drove out of India. They went and took shelter over there. They took Vedic culture in a corrupted form, and they have their own mythology with names of people that are actually, you know, the demigods and other personalities from the Sanskrit writings. In any case, Maya, we don't have to call Maya. Immediately she's there, engaging us. So as soon as the forgetfulness of Krishna and being in the mood of serving Krishna, there's a pause or there's complacency, what to speak of turning our attention away, immediately. Slackening in our submission unto Krishna, immediately. Maya's there, appealing. Come on and enjoy me. Like a prostitute. Come on and enjoy me. Maya's not a good mistress. she turns us upside down. And it's not, you know, for men only. It's souls that are turning attention away from Krishna. So that's what the anatomy here is. There's different varieties of that. So when there's distress, we may turn to friends that are unable or unwilling. So it's likened to jumping in a shallow river in scorching heat. There's no relief. There's no practical result. We don't get relief. Not the fault of the friend. It's the fault of our expectation. That's the wrong place to go. Krishna is the place to go. The next is suffering from a shortage of food. Suffering from a shortage of food. So we may go to someone who we appeal in charity or some other way. Please help me. And they may be unable or unwilling. It's another, so feeling dependent upon another for maintenance. That's where the second paragraph comes in. Kalo Shudra Sambhavan. And it's true. If one doesn't have that Vedic culture where the three classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, let's just say Vaishya, the bread basket, the belly, the production of food grains. But if there's no rain, or people are so disconnected from agrarian life, even in agrarian life, supposing there's a village where people are engaged in agriculture, there still needs to be Kshatriya, someone to administer the affairs of that village, and some brahmanas to guide the activities of everyone. Natural. Even if one doesn't have a clue about varnashram, it's a natural arrangement. And if they're unqualified persons who are the intellectual group, unqualified persons who are the administrator group, and what to speak of people that they're disconnected from production of food grains and protection of cows, they are rendered to be sudras because so many people are dependent on employment. And if the employment employer says you don't have a job anymore, you're destitute. Without details. The bureaucracy of a government. Bureaucracy has a negative connotation, but in one sense, in a positive sense, administrations in a country or wherever, they come and go. There's a set of leaders and they're elected or however they get their position. And then there's a group of people, they're the infrastructure beneath them that take care of the day-to-day. And as the leadership comes and it goes, the bureaucracy that supports those, that essential element for those that are in a leadership position, they stay. So that's like the government employees, and the shutdown is, they're applying for unemployment. They can't pay their bills. They can't pay their rent, they can't keep the electricity on, it's winter. And there's this fellow at the top that cuckoo, unqualified person altogether. So everyone suffers. Sometimes quachit household life, or not just household life, material life, becomes unbearable like a forest fire, and no relief Where's their relief in the forest fire? Where's their happiness, contentment in a forest fire? And there's so many forests, it goes on and on. So many forest fires, the insurance companies, people pay big fees for insurance, and now the insurance company is going bankrupt, so they can't pay the people that pay their insurance, their home is gone. Material life. But it's not to blame the insurance company or even the person that started the fire. It's just the nature of the place. As Prabhupada is saying, fires happen even without campfires. Just they happen. I asked, you know, it can be carelessness because there's a cause somewhere. I was visiting in LA recently, I asked Swavas, why is it? There's so many fires in California. Why California? Is there any kind of research into why? And he didn't offer a research answer. He just said there's, in California, during the winter season, it rains a lot. It doesn't snow. There's rain 4 months, and then 8 months is dry. No rain. So everything gets really, 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 really dry. Not necessarily, certainly, you know, water shortage for things, drinking and other things. But everything's dry. If somebody's careless, like they toss a cigarette out the window or something from their car, then comes wind and the fire. Due to lack of rain and lack of food because of lack of sacrifice. So it's a problematic place. And even if you're a good person, the place is problematic. And ill fortune comes just because it's the nature of the place. And we're trying to be enjoyers, trying to make it pleasant when it's unpleasant. It doesn't mean we should be complacent, but it doesn't mean we should have a false expectation. The expectation itself leads to misery because it's not going to happen. It's a place of duality, sometimes and sometimes. Therefore, this quachit, sometimes, not always, but sometimes, and you know that unwanted sometimes, and there's a whole long list of the sometimes. Makes whatever is the sukha from the senses contacting the object of the senses becomes dukkha. But because of the expectation, our consciousness becomes dulled. And one doesn't read the dukkha as dukkha. Or one reads it as dukkha and one becomes depressed. It's an industry in America. Literally, depression. One medical doctor, devotee, in Johns Hopkins said, it's the fastest growing industry in the medical field, depression. So pharmaceutical companies come up with a new one, and a new one, and a new one, and a new one, and a new one. And then the doctors, they don't know, so they tried this one, they tried that one. And the symptoms are worse than the medicine, and on and on and on and on and on. No wonder people want to make a zero. But that's not a solution either. Taxation is the fourth one. So people cheat or they try to hide their taxes, but take it anyway. Leaving So even if you have, it's the potential of material happiness, taxation takes it, especially in Kali Yuga, but other times also. You know, good government doesn't heavily tax, and taxes are to be used for the people who are receiving the tax. The intention, the Vedic system, the agrarian-based Vedic system is the king owns the land, and persons in the kingdom of the king who are not the Kshatriya but the Vaishya, they're given the opportunity to take care of the land, a certain part of the land. And then a certain amount of the production from the land goes to the king. And annually, the production goes to the king. And of course, something goes to the deity. That, you know, after paying taxes, the agricultural person makes a voluntary donation to the deity. In temples in South India, they have the whole big area where it's the donations that go to the deity. There's vestiges of that today where people visit the temple. People visit the temple and they bring something. And they bring something that's to be used in the service of the deity. It's culture. When you go to the teacher, you bring something for the teacher. I learned this when I was little. We, you know, bring an apple to the teacher. In America, I'm sure that doesn't happen now, but it's just vestiges of the Vedic culture. The teacher doesn't eat an apple. They have a salary. But Vedic culture is you bring something to the person who you're receiving something from. So the government, the deity, and the purpose of the supply for the deity is, supposing there is some difficulty, then the supply of the grains with the deity isn't going to be in difficulty. And then the temples supply to the people who may be in difficulty, as the government should be doing. And that's, you know, grain supply. The government has a big grain supply. And from time to time, governments have too much grain supply, and so they dump some of the grain supply. Instead of giving, Prabhupada speaks about this, instead of giving their surplus grain supply to some other country that has some shortage, because that's what the taxation is supposed to be for. But exploitatively, it's a whole other thing goes on when the persons are not qualified. And that's Kali Yuga. What to do? It's Kali Yuga. You suffer. Try to find enjoyment in the place of suffering. Not pleasant. So acknowledging the place of suffering, you make the best use of the bad bargain and go forward with your progress in Krishna consciousness. Because it's not just the escapism, but that's what the mission of human life really is. And therefore, association with one who knows and association with other sadhu sangha, that's the vision of our great acharyas. There's some discussion going on in some conference, because somebody is forwarding to me a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta from The Harmonist, 1936 or something like that, where he's speaking about organized religion. Now, he went ahead and established Gaudiya Math. So, and he wanted the Gaudiya Math to continue and told them how it should continue. Prabhupada understood, and he also established ISKCON. But Bhaktisiddhanta speaks strongly against the organized structure, organized religion. It takes away the spirit, the very nature of the organization. Can, not it must, but can take away the spirit of spontaneous devotion. And it becomes, it's one of these, issues for those that have studied how religions survive over periods of time and how they, some that don't. So one of the considerations of surviving is adaptability according to the present time, place, circumstance. Prabhupada did that for sure, bringing Krishna consciousness to the West. And how he applied Krishna consciousness in the West is not a one-to-one fit with his applying Krishna consciousness in India, with like women pujaris. You don't find women pujaris in India, most places. There's some exception. But, you know, because the culture in India doesn't, it's like allergic to that. Etc. Without detailing. So Prabhupada made adjustments without compromising principle based upon scripture. So without flexibility going forward in time, how to be relatable without compromising principle? So there are this, the conservatives that say you can't change anything. And then there's the liberals that says you can change anything. And then there are people that are acharyas that understand the difference between principle and detail. And the acharya can adjust detail, not, you know, Vishnudas or Bhakta Bozo. We have to be very careful about how we apply the principles, because the principles are principles and they're not to be deviated from. But the form may be a little different from one time and another time, or one place and another place. So it's for survival of an organization. There has to be the spirit similar. There has to be the spirit of voluntary and spontaneous service to Krishna. And it can be too restricted. In order to preserve, you need some fences. You need some guidelines. You need some standards. I'll just share one thing. There was a lot of discussion. About the ISKCON disciple course. Just as a for example. It's a fantastic curriculum. The concern was, even if it's a fantastic curriculum, does it create yet another obstacle for persons who wish to take shelter of the process of bhakti and a spiritual master? Have we become over-institutionalized that you have to pass the course before you can take shelter in a spontaneous mood of a spiritual master? You know, is it too much? Even if it's good curriculum. It's a good question. Now, it took a number of years to get the right curriculum and to have buy-in about, is it the right thing to do? Because we don't want to be overly restrictive. And then we're overly restrictive, then people go over there and get something cheap. And they don't get, you know, the connection with Prabhupada because they didn't want to, you know, take a course. And they feel, you know, my independence is being pinched. On the one hand, and on the other hand, Prabhupada wanted an organization. Bhakti Siddhanta wanted an organization. Vaishnava Vishva Raja Sabha. And to keep it spontaneous, do you have no fences or do you have fences? You have standards and guidelines, or you don't. And then if you don't, then anybody can say anything. I'm part of this organization. And they're out to lunch. And then they do out to lunch things, and it's a blemish on the organization. So there has to be something. And where do you draw the line? not an easy question to have it answered for. And you may be some adjusting as you go along. Anyway, back to the Bhagavatam verse. There's the hope, the general principle of material life is sense gratification. Do something in order to get something. Sense gratification, kama. And in that effort to find sense gratification, there's misery. And sometimes and sometimes. Even as devotees, sometimes and sometimes. Even within our families, even within our own heart, sometimes and sometimes. Because there's unwanted things in the heart. Sometimes and sometimes. So, the purification is needed, and clarity of what the goal is, that you can see that's what purity looks like, and strive by right means to reach that, depending upon Krishna, and then you have a good spiritual life. And it's a deterrent or a distraction, or it diminishes the effectiveness of the bhakti process to the degree there's this this kvachit and kvachit, expectation for happiness in the material field. So that we have to change the channel. The expectation of Krishna's happiness, striving for Krishna's happiness, and then accept whatever reciprocation comes while we continue to strive unconditionally for Krishna's happiness. That's the conclusion of all of this. Let's see if there's some discussion. Yes?
Everyone should live independently. My question is like I'm thinking about the ashrams, different ashrams, one ashram. So how do I get the idea of being independent here?
Well, the specific, it has to do with varna, not ashram.
Okay.
Finance or. Thank you. Finance are. The maintenance for a brahmana, the maintenance for a kshatriya, the maintenance for a vaishya, they need to be independent. And the shudra, that's the varna, is dependent. So financially, all of the other three should be independent. So it's not specific to ashram. So a grihastha could be any one of the four, but it has to do with their varna, not the ashram. Okay? Go ahead.
So I have one more, just a comment, since you were talking about the depression thing.
About the depression.
The depression. So in the hospitals nowadays, like I'm kind of watching. Come to know that every week the discharge in a week, the patients becoming more in the psychiatric unit when compared to the general other units.
They become more what?
These patients coming in and discharging.
There's more turnover.
Turnover
of
yeah.
Depression patients.
Patients. It's like every week. It's like more than compared to the general other patients.
Yeah.
So just thought to share.
Okay.
That.
Tamagun is on the rise. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Okay, it's a little speculative what I'm going to say. So you mentioned how the conditioned jivas in the spiritual world they get attracted for false expectations because they believe that there's some kind of material happiness in this world.
Okay.
Well, from when you read Prabhupada's books, you get that idea that the ultimate cause of that belief that there is happiness in this material world is evidence of being envious of Krishna, in one sense.
I'm listening.
I was wondering what could cause the soul to experience, to become envious of Krishna in the spiritual world?
The same question again. Take the microphone. The mistake behind the question is there's some other cause. That's the mistake. The answer is, my understanding of the answer is, within every soul there is free will. There is the option to properly and improperly use free will. What's the cause of improper use of free will? It's within the soul itself. There's no good reason. There's no good cause. It's misuse of free will. Well, logically, one continues, well, it's so nice, and why would we make the wrong choice? No good reason. Yadrichchaya, somehow or other, inexplicably, no apparent cause. It's within the capacity, within the soul, to properly or improperly use their free will. So here we are. Yeah, but... Okay. Something else, yes.
Krumash, I often hear from you...
A little further away. Yeah. No. Further away, because the volume is up. That is good.
First business of sadhaka is to get the heart clean done.
To get the which done?
Cleaning of the heart.
I'm listening.
And also you mentioned in Chicago, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions to overcome those tendencies, it might take at least 5 years.
Well, okay, I didn't say it exactly like that, but go ahead.
You can paraphrase. So if one wants to take up a project work for cleaning of heart, where one needs to start off?
Where?
Where one needs to start. And then
where is the question?
Yes.
Something that's doable. That's where. Not something that's too high, something that's doable. And if you're, you know, another consideration might be, if I take care of this one thing, it's going to help a lot of other things. But the one thing should be something doable. And then stay with it. Okay?
I have a follow-up question on Christian Prabhu's.
Oh, no.
It's conspiracy.
Someone else? Yeah.
Maharaj, in devotional life, I have one expectation.
You have one, that's good.
That even if I don't understand Krishna, if I just run like a dog after gurus and...
If you do what?
If I run like a dog after...
You run like a dog.
After gurus and Prabhupada.
Run like a dog. Well...
I mean, I...
What do you mean by run like a dog?
I use this thought from one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's...
Bhaktisiddhanta? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Bhaktisiddhanta said, run like a dog?
In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's different. He didn't say run like a dog.
I mean, not exactly that, but...
Is if I have to take birth, even as a dog, let it be in the home of a devotee. Even if, so it's not like run, you be careful.
From the song, Ohe Vaishnava Thakura, in the last verse.
Okay, but be careful.
Okay.
But with it, you're repeating what our acharyas say in the way that they actually said it. I just...
Yeah, yeah,
so, if we have the expectation that the mercy of the representatives of Krishna is the way to get the mercy of Krishna, and have absolute faith. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam that the phrase is running with your eyes closed. So like blind faith. But it's not blind faith, it's reasoned faith, that those personalities who are pure and in their representation of Krishna, I can repose my faith fully there. So then the metaphor is used, running with your eyes closed. That's a dangerous thing. When you're going to run, keep your eyes open. Drive your car and close your eyes. Running on four wheels. So it means faith. Then I have to be very careful about the person under whom I repose that faith. And what is it that the faith is? What's the qualification necessary for that person so that I can place unflinching faith? You know, when you take the disciple course, the ISKCON disciple course, you're familiar with that? Have you taken it? One day you will. When you do, you'll hear about, it's possible, it's in the Gaudiya, it's within the writings of contemporary acharyas in Lord Chaitanya's times, that it happened. Persons in that elevated position slipped and fell. It happened even with Bharat Maharaj in the position of Bhava Bhakti. He slipped and fell. So, but how are you to regard a situation like that when closing your eyes and running? So it's right in the course. So the principle is the right principle, and then there needs to be some intelligence guiding that principle in your life. Not hesitation, but intelligence guiding the application of that principle. Usually have something.
Hare Krishna.
So, my question is about the previous classes. You mentioned about the important items of mode of goodness.
Yeah.
Not lying, not stealing, start from some basics. Somewhere I heard, it's not generalizing, but a Brahman is always truthful, but a Vaishnava, according to time, place, circumstances, he may not say the
everything
obvious thing. Because he
there's examples of that.
Krishna's interest.
Yes, there's examples of that. That's transcendental truthfulness.
So that we can help other souls too.
Well, you have to be really qualified to apply that principle, because otherwise you'll cheat yourself. And here's three examples. When Vidura came back, he didn't say, Krishna has left, the whole Kuru dynasty is now annihilated. He didn't say. He could have. He didn't say, no, everything's great. He just didn't address the question, because it was a natural question to ask. He didn't disclose it. Or another classic example that's even stronger is what Sanatan Goswami did in order to get released from the jailer. He bribed him and he gave him a fictitious story to tell. Just release my chains, and if they ask, then you can say, oh, he went to pastoral and jumped in with the chains. They tried to rescue him, but they couldn't find him, and he must be dead. It's a lie. But the explanation Prabhupada has given is sometimes Nisanathan Goswami is not like, you know, Bhakta so-and-so. For the greater purpose of service to Krishna, such things can be done. Now we have to be careful. We have to be qualified like Sanatan Goswami. And otherwise, we just stay in the middle of the road. Better be safe than sorry. But one who is on that eminently qualified platform, then one can do such things and be able to discern. This is for the service of Krishna, and it's okay. I mean, another example is the deities that are now, well, they were installed in Buri place, and you read the Leelamrita story, and, you know, Prabhupada had them just take the deities right out of somebody's home. Right, well, they were sitting there. Ah! And off they went. Because they weren't worshipping, they were just furniture. And Prabhupada wanted to have them worshipped. So he had the power, the capacity to discern when it's okay and when it's not okay to do something like that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.